Lodge and Hopewell Gardens. Do all the things you wanted to do all summer, all day, all night. Winter, spring, summer, fall. Call 1-800-441-4410 for reservations at Pocono Gardens and beautiful Mount Airy Lodge.
Welcome to FW Presents, the anthology show for the Fire and Water Podcast Network. I'm your host, Rob Kelly, and this is another installment of Mountain Comics, the show where I look back at the comics that I bought while on vacation in the Pocono Mountains of Pennsylvania in the 1970s and 1980s. And joining me in the cabin this week is the hard-charging editor of 13thDimension.com, the J. Jonah Jameson to my Peter Parker, Dan Greenfield. Hi, Dan. Welcome back.
Hi, Rob. How are you?
Good. Can I get a raise?
Yeah, sure. Yeah, get out of here, kid. Go get me some photos.
So, in a bit of a change-up, when Dan was here in the first season, he came on to talk about an issue of the Teen Titans. So right. Here for season two, we're here to talk about an issue of the Teen Titans. In this case, though, it's the new series, the new Teen Titans, number 13, of course, by Marv Wolfman and George Perez. This issue was on sale August 6th, 1981. I remember what store I bought it in. I remember seeing the cover, which has got Robin, Kid Flash, and Cyborg in the jungle, and they are spying upon the maybe dead body of Robot Man dangling off of some vines, and there's a sign that says "Trespassers will be executed." It is an amazing cover.
Yeah.
Just one of the most arresting images in all of to me the run of this book, and that is saying something. Were you a fan of this title when it came out right out of the gate?
Yeah. One quick thing I want to mention, though, I have to say that I was deeply offended that I wasn't asked to be on your Batman number 341. Version of the podcast, but when I found out that it was Jerry Conway who was going to be your guest, no problem, dude. That was a great listen. But yes, for New Teen Titans, I was the perfect kid for this book. I absolutely loved the New Teen Titans, and in this period of time, really probably for the first 40, really kind of going up through the Judas contract, it was probably my favorite book for that entire period. You know, even Batman and Detective, and they took a back seat to this title, which was everything an adolescent kid would want. You know, I realized by looking at the date, I was 14 years old, and they call it the New Teen Titans, and it really was perfect. I mean, it's great to read it now, but it was perfect for a teenager. I absolutely loved the whole title, the artwork, the storytelling, and in rereading this one, I had forgotten just how packed these issues were.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a new statement to say that Marv Wolfman and George Perez were an amazing team. Definitely.
Absolutely.
more than the sum of their parts. And you know, it was sort of funny when I was rereading this comic again. And as I mentioned, you were here season one to talk about an issue of Teen Titans from the previous iteration.
Right.
And it's sort of funny when you think about that version of Teen Titans, which is where the book was brought back in the late 70s by Bob Rozakis and Jose Delbo and Don Heck, even though time-wise it's much further removed from the original 60s series,
right,
it is closer in tone and intent than this series is, even though this series chronologically is much closer to that last version of Teen. I mean, there's only like 3 years that separate the issue you and I talked about, and then this one, and yet these books are miles apart in approach and tone and feel. I mean, Marv Wolfman and George Perez brought a real kind of Marvel-ish kind of tone to it that DC hadn't really had, and they were just these. The thing I remember about this cover is I don't know how familiar I might have been with Robot Man at the time.
I don't think, and so
seeing an old, I knew it was an old character, but seeing it, and I may not have known that he had been in a previous issue of Teen Titans, and he had been in Superman Family. It wasn't like he was, and of course there was the new Doom Patrol, so it wasn't like he was gone. But I think part of the thing that appealed to me about this comic was that like the new Teen Titans were digging through the past of DC Comics. That was always exciting.
I was the same way. I knew that Robot Man was kind of something, but I wasn't really the kind. The Doom Patrol didn't really, resonate with me at all. They were always just kind of out there on the periphery. I was vaguely aware of them, but I really didn't become, more, I guess, acutely aware of them until this actual storyline. And it's not just that they were delving into DC's past. What they did a really good job of, Wolfman and Perez. And by the way, if I may pimp for a minute, we did the Marv Wolfman interviews. at 13th Dimension that people can check out, because I talked to Wolfman about the new Teen Titans and what his, you know, thinking was in terms of the series and how he and Perez collaborated. So I do want to throw that out there before I forget. But beyond that, what I also liked is that how they spent the – I mean, this was only, as they say on the cover, you're heralding our second sensational year, you know, issue number 13. So they're still really at the beginning here. But how they focused on the individual characters in terms of story arcs. You know, in the first year alone, you get, you know, story in either single issues or multi-issues about Raven and Donna. And here you're getting, you know, a Changeling's, you know, his whole, you know, he's going to be the focus of this because of his years with the Doom Patrol. And at the same time, it's all layered in with these interpersonal stories that each of these characters have. And the way that they balance it is actually remarkable.
Oh, absolutely. And I'm glad you mentioned the little tagline on the cover about heralding our second sensational year. Like, that itself, to me, is kind of an interesting touch that comics hadn't done, which was kind of establishing a rapport with the audience, because this is almost like they're talking about the comic book in seasons.
Right.
And that was something that comic books didn't really do.
Right.
You know, to that point, to talk about, like, they knew that the audience was following that closely to be able to say, like, hey, you know, we're this team, and we're on this extraordinary run. And to talk about it on the cover, that's just very unusual. It's not something you really saw before.
Well, they were really – they hit the jackpot with this comic book. And I'm sure that your regular listeners are well aware of it, and maybe some aren't, you know, quite as. But this was an enormous shot in the arm to DC, which had been – you know, I don't want to go so far as to say flailing, because everything is relative. But DC, you know, Marvel had really, you know, right in this period was really having DC's lunch. And they really needed a hit like this. And this thing was far beyond what anybody really expected. Because I even remember when I first, you know, I liked the Teen Titans as a kid. I always enjoyed them. And like, as you know, I was on that last episode that we talked about them. But it was a completely different tone. And even when they did the DC Comics Presents issue and issue number one came out, I kind of went in like, wait, do I really want to commit to another Teen Titans comic? I don't know. No, I know that sounds stupid, but it's true. And I read the preview in DC Comics Presents, and I thought, wow, this is really cool, and it's really good looking. I didn't know who George Perez was until this comic book was, because I was not a Marvel kid. So I didn't have the background. You know, when he popped up in Teen Titans, to me, he was a brand new artist. And issue number one, and I became addicted to this comic. It just absolutely, it actually, I would say it spoke to me. It really was everything I was looking for in a comic book at that time.
Well, it's got all the teen melodrama plus yep. all the action. I mean, Perez was just one of these guys that could do everything. He could
right.
do the quiet moments. He could do the big moments. I mean, just, it really was. It had everything. And, I have to figure that when I saw this book on the stands, again, I remember what newsstand I bought it at, the cover looks like something out of Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah.
Because they're in the jungle, and this comic, as I mentioned, came out in August of 1981. Raiders came out in June of 81.
Wow.
So this was only 2 months apart. now, obviously, they were working on this
sure.
before Raiders of the Lost Ark became a big thing.
Yeah.
But nevertheless, I mean, I'm sure that as a kid, I was like, oh, my God, it looks just like Indiana Jones. And it's
yeah.
like, you know, like a double plus good kind of thing. I mean, you get this extra little Raiders flavor in the middle of your superhero comic. It's perfect. So.
And look at the level of detail on this cover.
Oh, man.
And all drawn by hand. I mean, it really is amazing. I think he drew every single blade of grass and every single leaf that was in the jungle here. I mean, it's remarkable.
Oh, and we need to mention Romeo Tangal, the inker, who had
yes.
to ink all this stuff.
I know. The poor guy. I hope they gave him battle pay.
He probably got this cover, and he's like, oh, all right. I'm going to see my kids for a week. So anyway, this particular issue story is Friends and Foes Alike by, again, Wolfman, Perez, Romeo Tangal, Adrian Roy, Ben Oda, and the late, great Len Wein as editor. After stopping some crooks from stealing computer parts and using almost lethal force in the process, Wonder Girl meets up with her boyfriend, Terry Long, everybody's favorite, who is waiting for her in a nearby alley. Having lunch in an outside cafe, Donna reveals how guilty and insecure she is feeling after the Titans battle Deathstroke, leaving Changeling's life dangling by a thread. She tells Terry she wants to go back to Paradise Island and check on his progress. Meanwhile, Starfire is participating in an Amazon combat tournament while Raven looks on. Raven seems a bit unnerved by the fierceness of the combat, but Starfire revels in the challenge, flashing back to her days on her home planet, using the skills she learned there to best all of the Amazons. Following the tournament, Raven and Starfire take a stroll with Hippolyta, but the conversation is interrupted when an explosion rocks the island located at the lab containing Garth and the purple healing ray. Meanwhile, in the jungles of Ubanda, Robin, Kid Flash, and Cyborg are headed for a rendezvous with Robot Man, Garth's old teammate from the Doom Patrol. Kid Flash goes on ahead and comes back with some grim news, simply asking his teammates to follow him. They make their way to a vine-covered stone temple, and hanging off the front is the body of Robot Man, a crude keep-out sign hanging from around his neck. Cyborg uses his cybernetic tools to wake Robot Man up, who demands to know who this is that's looming over him. Back on Paradise Island, Starfire, Raven, and Hippolyta get to the lab and are greeted by Changeling, now in the form of a Brachiosaurus, in a murderous frenzy. Not recognizing his friends, he attacks Starfire and Raven, who uses her magical powers to subdue him and return him back to human form. Soon, Changeling wakes up. Not knowing where he is horrified to learn that he is on an island full of beautiful women, but he, being a man, cannot get off the table he is currently laying on. Back in Africa, Robin and the rest find the entrance to the secret lab built beneath the temple ruins. Robot Man believes this is the secret hideout of the Brotherhood of Evil, the team of villains responsible for the murder of the original Doom Patrol. Kid Flash does recon and finds two massive robot sentries on duty. He takes them out with a few super speed punches. Soon our heroes learn there's practically an entire city built underground. A view screen turns on, and Madame Rouge tells the sentries to kill the intruders who have tripped the base's security systems. Just seeing Rouge's face drives Robot Man into a frenzy, but Robin talks him down for the moment. Inside a nearby cell is Steve Dayton, a.k.a. former Doom Patrol member Mento. It's clear Dayton has been drugged, for he doesn't recognize any of the Titans or Robot Man. More sentries attack, but the Titans defeat them. Kid Flash finds Dayton's old costume, and they leave the base. As the Titans board their jet, parked out in the jungle, we see they're being watched by Madame Rouge. She gloats that now they have an inside man, the Teen Titans will die. As the Titans board, none of them notice the cryptic gleam in Dayton's eye. To be continued, of course. I love this comic. I mean, it is so much fun. The intro, the splash page is great. I love Wonder Girl's dialogue where the guy says, "Mama, put me down." And she says, "Forget it, creep. Hijacking these computer components don't earn you any mercy."
Yeah.
Really? Computer components doesn't earn you any mercy? Really? Death penalty for stealing a few keyboards? I don't know, Wonder Girl. I mean, at least she admits she's in a really bad mood, and that's why she kicks these guys' asses so thoroughly.
Yeah. She looks great, though. The way that George Perez drew Wonder Girl, I mean, I've said before elsewhere that her outfit there, that her second outfit, is actually it's a rejiggered version of her second outfit, is one of the best superhero designs ever. It's practical, actually. I mean, I know, yes, it does have the plunging neckline, so it's not that practical. But compared to a lot of other superhero outfits, it's pretty basic.
Wonder Woman's more practical than Wonder Woman.
Yes, it's boots and a leotard, and you know, it's really simple, but it looks really terrific. And the way George Perez drew Wonder Girl was great. But it also shows you, more importantly, how much of a badass she was, which is another thing that I forgot. Because, again, I haven't picked up these comics in a very long time, and it's something that I've been meaning to go back to start from the beginning and kind of binge read through, and one of these days I'm going to do that probably fairly soon. So it was kind of fun to just jump back into an issue that I didn't really remember the details of. But you not only start off with great action, but it is again that combination that Wolfman and Perez were able to show action right off the bat and yet also have it be a character moment at the same time. Because you get her thinking. It's not like in modern comics, you don't see, I mean, they have the text boxes now, but you rarely see the thought balloons of what's going through the character's head without it sounding cryptic or being overly written or sounding like Mickey Spillane. This is just her thinking, and I really enjoy that that's kind of interspersed with her, you know, with all of the activity that's going on. And it and I'm enjoying myself until she meets, you know, Creepy Terry in the alleyway who's standing there with her clothes. Because once he shows up, I'm like, oh, come on, I forgot about how much I dislike this guy.
Do you think a lot of – I mean, look, I think Terry Long is definitely not a particularly great character. But do you also think that there's a certain amount of people, like readers, don't like him, mostly guys, because they're kind of jealous in some
yes.
weird way?
Oh, absolutely.
It's like, really? That guy?
There is real psycho – there's psychodrama going on with Terry. And I do think that there is kind of a – like she could do so much better.
Yeah.
You know? But I also think that he's sort of a the fever dream of every dorky intellectual. You know,
yes.
I mean, and I think that's also due. He's wish fulfillment. You know, here's this guy who is, you know, only moderately attractive, and he's also supposed to be 70s sensitive guy, and he's with this fabulous woman, except the part that really creeps me out, and it wasn't even that, it was the age difference.
Right.
I mean, he's supposed to be at least in his mid 30s, and she's supposed to be in the Teen Titans.
Yeah.
And even then, when I was, you know, a 14-year-old, I thought, this doesn't feel right to me. There's something wrong about this relationship that I never bought because of that age difference. It felt creepy to me.
I don't think we ever see it, but imagining the first meeting between Terry Long and Wonder Woman, it must have been like, Wonder Woman's like, really? You're how old? He's like, oh, sorry. He's like, he's shaking Diana's hand. He's slowly feeling all the bones in his hand get crushed. Yeah, he's like, oh, okay, it's like the end of Superman 2 or something.
Right,
okay.
Exactly.
A sequence that I really like, the sequence on Amazon Island with Paradise Island, with Starfire and Raven, is one of the things that this book hit upon, is that this group of heroes was like more of a family.
Yeah.
And that they all socialize, because you've got Starfire and Raven on Wonder Girl's home island.
Right.
Which is like a nice thing. You didn't see that a lot in Justice League. Once in a blue moon, you would have like Green Lantern visit the Fortress of Solitude.
Right.
And I love that stuff. I love the idea of all the heroes hanging out at each other's home base. But Teen Titans really leaned into that heavily, of the idea that they were a family and they would socialize outside of them being superheroes or hanging out at the Titans base. I always thought that was really cool, because I'd want to do that. If I hung out with other superheroes, I'd be at the Batcave all the time if I could be. I'm like, this is the coolest thing ever.
And Wolfman addressed that actually when I talked to him, because he said that everybody talked about how similar the book was with X-Men. And because X-Men was the book at the time.
Sure.
And everyone was saying, oh, it was a ripoff of X-Men, ripoff of X-Men. And Wolfman's like, no, it really wasn't a ripoff of X-Men, it was a ripoff of Fantastic Four. Because he wanted to have that family feeling exactly the way you just hit on it. I mean, you're really right on the money there. And I also like the fact that Raven and Starfire are on Paradise Island, and Wonder Girl's not even there. I mean, she's back in, you know, man's world, you know, living her regular life, while the two of them just decided to hang back and do whatever it is they were going to do. But what I particularly love about it, and again, we get a number of splash pages in this issue that are really spectacular, but seeing Starfire standing on the back of a giant Kanga with a big lance and letting out a war whoop. If DC doesn't make a statue of that, they're doing it wrong. Because the thing that you also forget, or at least I forgot, is that we've seen different versions of Starfire over the years, you know, subsequently. But the warrior aspect of, you know, fierce, yes, she's got her star bolts and all of that, and the innocent and, you know, kind of the fish out of water quality that's played up. But you forget that she was an absolute badass fighter. And it wasn't just her star bolts. It was just her you know, even Hippolyta, you know, kind of compares her to Wonder Woman with her battle prowess. And we get, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, I think 4 pages, if not more, of just her kicking ass. And it's, yep, it's terrific. While she's also, again, you're getting backstory, because you're getting her memories of being trained. And as I mentioned before, the thing what they did with these characters is that they would have either single issues or whole arcs kind of devoted to that character, or at least they were the central part of what was driving the story. We don't go to Tamaran and find out about all of her background and her sister and stuff like that for almost another year on the comic. So really, they're just still building towards something that we're not going to see for another year.
It's amazing. Yeah, it's all really, really, really good stuff. Yeah. And then the sequence out in the jungle. And this is, again, something that some other artists were able to do. I don't want to just say George Perez is the only one to do it, but he was the first one I can remember doing it in terms of where I read the comic at the time. I've gone back and read back issues. And in fact, the comic you mentioned, Batman number 341, does this with the Robin solo story. But I love the shot of Robin parked in high up in the tree,
yep,
as they're staring at the thimble. And Perez makes Robin look cool.
Yeah.
You know, like kind of like almost Batman-esque, despite the fact he's in this ridiculous costume with these day glow colors. But he looks really cool hanging out in the tree with the shadows draped over him. And the minute I go to these sequences, I hear the John Williams Raiders theme. You know, I'm just waiting for the Javitos to show up at any moment. I mean, just And it's perfect. I mean, it's like I could have watched these three guys romp around the jungle like for the whole book. Yeah. My memory of it was that they did. When I came back and reread it, I was like, wow, they really spend a lot of time with Wonder Girl and a lot of time with Starfire and Raven. This whole part is really only a little more than half the book, but it's just so effective. I just love watching these guys root around and going on this adventure.
Yeah, it's true, because I had the same thing. I thought that it was going to be a lot more about this than it actually was. But that, again, that just shows you how packed they made all of these issues, where they would build, you know, the whole issue is picking up threads that from things that had come before and laying down seeds for what's to come, while also interspersing personal moments and big action. And the fact that they were able to do this in what? How many pages did it take?
24 pages.
27, according to the way the story pages are numbered. But yeah, it is amazing what they do here. But specifically to Robin, you know, and it's addressed later in the issue also, where they make fun of his costume and maybe he should start wearing long pants, which of course had been something that throughout the 70s was really, really a big deal. You know, Batman Family and Batman having those issues where people sent in their versions of Robin's new costume, and ultimately they changed, you know, he became Nightwing later on. But that was still a theme here. But it's – Perez may have been the best Robin artist ever. You know, the way he made Robin look badass in that outfit. And you're right. When you look at him in the trees here and the way the outlines of the shadows of the leaves, and they – and he's consistent all the way through, you know, where the light is coming from. Because if you look down, right below him, the shadows are falling the same way on Kid Flash. And then you look to the left and you see they're falling the same way, but from a different angle on Cyborg. It's this one panel, which is so incredibly detailed, is just a masterclass on how to draw. And it's so impressive. Also a good reminder, too, because I haven't seen the regular Kid Flash outfit in a while, but that's another one of the all-time great comic book designs is this Kid Flash outfit. And Perez drew the hell out of him, too.
Yeah. Oh, it sets the tone perfectly because, I mean, with the lighting, you get the sense that it's either dawn or dusk.
Right.
You know, night, and it sets the tone. And again, the way that he drew the cape.
Yep.
The way it drapes over Robin, it's just, it's perfect. It's really well done. So then we go back to Paradise Island. Of course, we have the interlude, and there's the gag with Changeling wakes up, and he's like, well, I'm on an island full of hot babes. And you're like,
can't touch
all of them, which is like a good gag. In the middle of a relatively serious issue, that's a nice joke, you know, that he's like, yeah, every guy wakes up of dreams of waking up on Paradise Island, but like, yeah, but you got to just lay on this table the whole time. Like, son of a bitch, you know? And then another way, again, the way Perez paces these stories is he's able to have space for these great moments. When we go back to the jungle, that establishing shot of all of them looking down at the stairwell it is so beautiful. I love the body language. I love Robin with his arm leaning up against it. That's really cool. Like, it's fantastic the way he paces it. And just, again, gives it the sense of pacing. And I don't know how Perez ever got all this stuff done. I mean, I just don't know how he drew all this stuff so fast. I mean,
on a monthly basis. And the book wasn't delayed. I mean, I don't remember there ever being a problem with the book coming out on time.
Oh, it's amazing.
And it's not even, and it's not only even just the detail of what you see underground, but everything that's surrounding them—the statuary, the carvings, the decrepitude, and then even when you go down, you know, to the bottom left panel below that shot, and again back to Robin, and he's just standing there, but the way that Perez draws him is that he looks really, really cool.
It's really great, this whole sequence. So then I love when Kid Flash takes out the two sentries by punching them in the face, and like he shatters the glass that's containing their face. And I love how violent that feels, because you got to feel like if you were wearing a glass visor and someone punched your face by going through the visor, your face would be full of glass at that point. So I love that. And again, it makes Kid Flash, whose name and costume, although I admit it's a great design, both Flashes have great costumes. Their designs don't inspire a lot of fear necessarily, but getting punched by a super speed fist through glass probably really hurts. So I love that he really puts that across.
Yeah, and the two pages are really good at showcasing, to that point, Kid Flash, just showing his powers and his abilities and all of these things that he's doing, running through rocks, you know, throwing his arms together and, you know, creating a little wind blast, you know, punching these guys out. He's so efficient. And the way it's laid out panel to panel and the way it's drawn, it's like it's exciting. And that's what you want when you're watching any, whether it's Flash or Kid Flash. And he doesn't have electricity flying off of him. They just show the sense of speed and the sense of movement just in the way that Perez draws the characters and the way the panels are laid out. It really is, you know, again, I don't want to overstate it, but it really is brilliant. And at the same time, he's doing all of these things while he's thinking about his future. He's thinking about, do I really want to be Kid Flash? Because, again, I had forgotten that also was – because they created new parts of their personalities for this book. Kid Flash, you know, up to this point was not – I mean, they introduced the whole idea that he had mixed feelings about being a superhero and that maybe this wasn't the life that he wanted to lead. And he's thinking, well, does that make me a coward or and all of that psychodrama I had completely forgotten about when I read this. I was like, oh, that's right. That's right. That was like a big thing with him because everybody talked about, you know, when Robin became Nightwing, people forgot it that at the same time, Wally West had pretty much, at least for a very short period of time, gave up being Kid Flash. And then he later came back in Crisis and then, of course, took over for Barry Allen. But he actually, quote unquote, retired for, you know, a minute and a half.
Yeah, that's a great sequence. And I love the full-page shot of the lab. I mean, that's great. That's right out of every James Bond movie.
Oh, yeah.
It's like, oh, my God, Blofeld's volcano lair. You know?
And Star Wars, too. It's like the Death Star. I mean,
yes.
You know, instead of being stormtroopers, you see these red I don't know if they're not robots, but, you know, these red guards and whatever they're doing, showing them all training and going into maneuvers with these gigantic view screens. I mean, it's Kirby-esque in its scope. But it's got that classic level of detail that Perez brings to things. While you have, again, our four heroes here looking really cool, kind of in the foreground, you know, just looking at this whole thing, and they're just kind of awestruck themselves.
Yeah, it's great. And then a couple pages later, Kid Flash gets another great move where a bunch of the sentries come after them. It is like Star Wars because they all look like stormtroopers. And he just dives into them using super speed, turning himself into a missile, which is great. I think that's fantastic. And then you get page 25, which is the six panels of the sentries firing on it. And it's getting, for as good as Perez was at all the human drama, and he was good at it, then he's able to let it rip.
Yeah.
With these action sequences where Cyborg is punching two of the guys with his robotic fist. Robin sticks his entire foot into the helmet of one guy. So that guy's whole jaw is broken, by the way. I love that he whips out the Robin shield R on it.
Yes.
That's great. I love that. They're all about branding in the Batman universe.
Yes, it's so true. It's got the big R on it, the big plastic shield that he keeps in his utility belt. And I love how Cyborg is like, what don't you have in there? And Robin just kind of shrugs it off. And I, again, also had forgotten some of Cyborg's powers, and I guess that he had this flying fist thing that he used to do that I'd completely forgotten about, that I like that he kind of whips it around like a bolo and he, you know, kind of like flicks his fist at these guys and knocks them out from a distance.
Yeah, it's great. And then in the last panel, Cyborg literally just bear hugs one of the guys and just breaks all the armor, shatters it, and we see the guy underneath. I just love it. It's great. Yeah. I mean, again, it's... Look, how many times have we seen in comic books superheroes fighting a bunch of robot guards? We've seen that 40 billion times, but it takes a visual imagination, and I don't know, of course, how much of that is Wolfman describing it in detail, or he just let Perez just go to town, you know?
Yeah.
Here, George, just they defeat a bunch of robots. You figure out how they're going to do it. But it just that's such a visual imagination to think of, like, there's different ways. We'll kick this guy. We'll smash this guy. We'll bear hug this other guy. Like, that's great, as opposed to just having superheroes just punching. It's all different forms of fighting styles. And then we get to the next page, and they're all just laying there with their armor cracked. And we're picturing they're all like, ugh.
And Robin is in his classic fist-in-hand pose, too. Mm-hmm. You know, it's like one of those – it's a little throwaway thing, but that's what you're used to see. Going back to Burt Ward, I mean, that's what you're used to seeing Robin look like. But it also shows that, again – you know, Robin is the only one without any powers here, and yet he not only holds his own, you know, he's kicking ass right alongside these guys. So again, it's just everybody gets their moment in these comic books.
Yeah. And then we get to the final page where we see Madame Rouge, and I believe that's General Immortus. She talks about that now that we have an inside man, he's a mole, the Titans are going to die, and it ends with that great panel of Steve Dayton waking up. Steve Dayton was always more trouble than he was worth, in my opinion.
Yeah.
I defy any kid that bought this comic, bought maybe New Teen Titans for the first time, to buy this issue and not pick up the next one. How could you not?
Well, not just that. How could you not just pick this up and then want to go back to see what you missed?
Yeah,
They do a really good – again, with all of these issues, they made the sense of the tight continuity of these books where they were constantly referencing things that had just happened, and you know they made the aftermath of what they had been through is interwoven into this adventure, while at the same time they're laying, as I mentioned before, they're laying the tracks for the next adventure. So you not only want to pick it up, you want to go figure out, oh my God, this is issue number 13. How do I get issue number 12 or 11 or 10? And because this comic at that time was absolutely addictive. And when you look at how much is in here, you know, when you talk about today's, you know, comics are written to be turned into trade paperbacks.
Oh my God, this would be six issues. I say that all the time, but this story would be six issues.
Absolutely. Just them skulking around the jungle lair before they go underneath would be an entire issue. You know, they'd pad that out with them running into, you know, dinosaurs, which would be cool. But I mean, you know, there would be a whole, you know, it would be a whole thing where they'd have to kind of get to the temple before they even got to the temple. It really is amazing.
Yeah, I mentioned that this comic came out on August 6th, 1981. That was the same release day as Batman 341, Captain America 263, Micronauts 35, Marvel Super Action 37, Marvel Team Up 111, and Avengers 213, all of which I've covered on the show before. So August 6th, 1981, good day for Mountain Comics.
It sure that was a great day on your vacation.
Oh man, and there are more. There's more books that were released on that day that are on my list to do that I haven't gotten around to yet.
That's amazing.
I must have begged my parents for money to be like, I gotta get this one and this one and this one. Oh, James Bond, I gotta get this one. It's a huge, huge, huge day. This was such a good comic. I don't know if this was the first issue of New Teen Titans that I bought at the time, but I know that I bought it after this. Like I just kept going because it was just always one of the great comics. And when I go through the books that I bought on mountain trips subsequently, every 12th issue is the issue of Teen Titans.
Right.
Like, you know, number 25 is on a Mountain Comics, number 37. It just keeps tracking as I kept buying it. It was just one of the great DC series of all time. So,
absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess that's going to do it. Is there anything else you want to say about New Teen Titans before we wrap up, Dan?
Yeah, I do, actually. The letters page. I always like looking at letters pages because I always like to see the contemporary commentary on issues that had just come out. And it talks about A Day in the Lives, Teen Titans number 8, which is one of the most famous issues of the series.
Right,
but I just wanted to point out that the first letter is by your pal and mine, Michael Urey, the editor of Back Issue, which you contribute to and which we feature quite a bit at 13th Dimension. So I figure Michael deserves a shout out. It's basically a love letter to the new Teen Titans. And it starts with, I want you guys to know you've created a miracle. I am a comics child of the 60s, but 15 years and thousands of comics later, some of the magic I felt has worn off. I've read so many comics and all the plots, blah, 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 become eventful, uneventful and boring. Then last spring, I heard there was going to be another Titans revival. I anticipated another disaster, but I read the special preview. I was excited. You've created comics nirvana. So Michael Urey knew what was going on back in 1981 along with the rest of us.
Oh, that's super cool. I'm always so jealous of comic fans that grew up and then got to work at DC. It's always like, oh, man, don't even the dream. So very cool. So, all right, well, as we wrap up here, what do you have coming up on 13th Dimension other than that really awesome Real Retro Cinema column?
Yeah, that's right. And our recent excerpt of your Aquaman merchandise in the Bronze Age is also
that's right.
there as well,
that's right.
featuring right. Mego and superpowers and what have you. We, you know, comics yesterday and today. We always have some stuff going on. We've been doing a lot with this anonymous collector who's got this incredible collection of Batman 66 costumes that we've been showing off at the site. plus, you know, our usual, you know, commentary and previews and reviews and articles by people like you.
All right, very cool. I'm sure everybody who listens to the show already visits 13th Dimension regularly, but of course we'll have a link in the show notes in case you haven't. Go over there. There's a treasure trove of fun material to check out. So, Dan, thank you so much for coming back. You know, I always enjoy talking to you, and I don't know, maybe when you come back for season 3, we'll find another Teen Titans comic to talk about.
Sign me up. Thanks for having me.
Very cool. Of course, everybody can find back episodes of the show on our network site, fireandwaterpodcast.com. And please leave me comments and let me know what you think about the show. I will be reading them on a future episode, I promise. So that is going to do it. Dan and I are going to kick back and watch the sunset here out on the porch in the cabin. I have a couple of sodas and some food. And so everybody take it easy and we will see you later. Bye.
Now the night has gone. Now the night has gone away. Doesn't seem that long. We hardly had 2 words to say. Hold me in your arms for just another day. I promise this one will go slow. Oh, we have the right, you know. We have the right, you know. Don't say the morning's come. Don't say the morning's come so soon. Must we end this way when so much here is hard to lose?